Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Resurrected Winners You podcast. If this is your first time listening, think of us as your friendly neighborhood video game book club coming together to discuss a specific game each and every episode, dismantling the game to discuss its ins and outs in the hope that we can have a bit of fun and bring to you an interesting take on a game that you've either played before, played alongside us in anticipation of the episode, or even as an opportunity to hear a bit more about a game that you might have been curious about, but for whatever reason, it's never quite made it from your pile of shame into your completed pile. My name is David, and with me this week is a bearded sensation whose presence will surprise nobody. Why? Because he's been on every episode everyone has used so far. It's Mr. Alex Aldridge. How are you doing today? Alex.
Ahoy, hoy.
You swinging bombs, ready to go, full of enthusiasm and excited for the next hour or in a bit?
I think so. Yeah, I feel excited. I feel whelmed by the subject matter.
Yeah, I think I'm probably in the same boat as you. It's going to be you've gone for a severe cram sesh, so we never really had the opportunity anyway, but I was deliberately staying quiet on this game until we started recording this pod to see what your thoughts on this were going to be. What are you drinking? I see you've got a beer on the go.
No, I was just trying to see if whelmed is a word in terms of underwhelmed, but
must be whelmed, because you can be overwhelmed and underwhelmed.
A swimmer whelmed in a raging storm means to engulf, submerge, or bury. Why is it underwhelmed and overwhelmed if whelmed doesn't mean... What does any of it mean?
Yeah, overwhelmed to me is like there's too much, because based on that, if it's like connected to a wave, if you're overwhelmed, then you're sort of riding the crest of a wave.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, never makes sense. That doesn't really fit in the context I've come to understand the word. And underwhelmed, I guess, would be so far below the depths.
Yeah.
That you can't even see the top.
Yeah. Sorry, I totally derailed everything you were asking me there by trying to look at what the word whelmed.
You're drinking something. What are you drinking?
Ah, this is another BrewDog Hazy. Mm. Hazy Pale Ale.
Good choice.
I suppose it's good for a session beer, but I'm not having a session because it's Tuesday.
Are you what's their punk? Are you a punk fan? That's their sort of go-to.
Punk IPA, yes. And punk in general. As I was I went to NoFX's final ever UK tour Sunday.
Fantastic. Bet that was amazing. Big fan of NoFX, or at least I was.
I didn't realise, otherwise I would have invited you. Yeah, they've been going for 40 years, so they're doing 40 shows in 40 cities, and they play 40 songs for each show. So they play for about 2 hours, although they did have a piss break, and they did have to
going that long, you do have to have a pee break in the middle.
Yeah, Fat Mike is 56 years old, I found out.
Wow.
He still is a very bad live singer, and sometimes he doesn't even bother to just sing it. He just doesn't. And they had to restart 4 songs because they kept fucking them up, but they were keeping a running tally of whose fault it was, which was quite funny.
Yeah, that was pretty
I've seen NoFX before. They're always really fun, but also kind of shit to watch live. Whereas Lagwagon, one of the supporting bands, were just not fun. They're just old and shit. I felt really sorry for
them. I thought you were going to go the other way. I thought there was going to be a happy ending to that.
No, everybody was underwhelming until NoFX were whelming. Everybody else on the bill either had terrible sound or just weren't very good. We decided that we hate outdoor gigs because of...
Oh, outdoor gigs suck, man. So bad.
Especially when it's windy, which it was. And then the sound waves just go like...
Yeah, I was going to say...
So you can never hear it.
It's rare that I go to an outdoor gig/festival and the sound is any good.
Yeah, just garbage.
Yeah, it's really bad.
NoFX sounded okay, but the rest of it was terrible. I paid 12 quid for a crappy little tub of noodles and chicken and £7 for a Strongbow Dark Fruits.
That sounds like a... Yep, that sounds like a music gig. Did you... What's the crowd like at NoFX gig these days?
Mostly older than me.
Really? Okay, because I was like, is there a bunch of awkward-looking emo kids going about, or is it all old?
It's all old punks.
Kind of into that, although, to be honest.
Yeah, I did feel more as at home as I could in that scenario. Or, however, what's the actual worst thing about an outdoor gig?
The actual worst thing about it?
Mm. Yeah.
Don't know. I was going to say leaving, trying to get home in the traffic, but it's...
No, that was actually okay. That was okay. It's with relation to what it allows people to do while they're outside.
Pee.
I probably would have preferred that.
No.
Because so many people were smoking and doing drugs.
Okay.
Gave me a headache, man.
Yeah.
Just no matter where you went, you couldn't get away from the amount of people smoking everywhere.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that would be really bad.
And it was windy, so it's all going in my face. Just awful.
That is hands down the best thing. One of the best things that's ever happened. So it would be just around about the time that we turned 18, they banned smoking from pubs and clubs.
Was it really that long ago?
Well, I've got memories of coming home from nights out and waking up in the morning, my clothes stinking of smoke, so... I was maybe 19, 20 when they banned it. It wasn't long that I was drinking before they got rid of it. And what a delight. What a delight. The worst thing you've now got to do, other than if you're an outdoor gig, of course, is to walk through the cloud smoke. But it's now not a smoke. It's not like smoky smoke. It's now vape cloud. So it's kind of like thick. I don't know. It's almost thicker in a way. It's disgusting in a totally different way.
Yeah, and it's more obnoxious because now people do it on purpose in places that are public because they know that they're the ones they can get away with.
Yeah,
like buses and things.
It's the
not
guys.
That I don't bus it, but
I'm entertained by the. I'm sure I'm going to offend someone, but I don't like vaping, so eat it. The people that are mad into vaping and they've obviously got like their own custom rig, and then they like inhale it, and then they just get engulfed. It's like someone set off a smoke potion or something, and it's just like you can't see it. You can't see head for just vape cloud. It's just unbelievable.
Mad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny when
they're like vape shops and stuff. Like,
who's desire it to
run a vape shop?
It's all vape shops and pound cash for gold and pound shops in Aberdeen Union Street these days.
What an economy!
Ooh.
What an economy. Speaking of economy, though. Later on in the day, having already been gouged for everything that I own to just have some fucking noodles and buy Chris. What did I buy Chris in the end? Oh, McDonald's on the way back. But I said to him after about 10, what time was it? Like 10 o'clock or something or other. I said I could really smash a bowl of cereal. And then he was like, oh, we should set up a cereal stand at all these festivals and charge like £12 for an undermilked bowl of Cocoa Pops or whatever. So that's potentially what our new business is going to be.
Yeah.
Because I think that'd be quite cool.
Yeah.
Especially for like an old, you know, a long weekend festival where people are just waking up at 6 a.m, mouth tastes like someone's tried to park a car in it. Bowl of cereal?
Yeah, I think
£10, please.
Yeah. It will be so expensive as well.
Yeah. I love cereal. There are very few things that have been invented by man that's better than cereal. You don't eat cereal.
No, I think that this would possibly be the biggest sort of chasm in opinion that you and I have when it comes to cereal.
So it does appear that we have now, we've just sort of peered open the cracks of a burgeoning chasm of
amongst my friends locally. I've got quite a hardline stance on cereal. I don't actually have as hardline a stance on cereal as I make out, but it winds them up. So every time I see them, I have a harder and harder stance on my cereal position. But yeah, I haven't had cereal in a long time. And if I was going to have cereal, it would be probably cereal that's incredibly boring. So like cornflakes.
Mm-hmm. Cassie loves my cornflakes now.
Cornflakes are
she keeps
top.
Trying to steal them.
And what other cereals would I have eaten? Like, I'm more of a muesli man, I think, than a cereal. Does that count?
I don't count it.
So, yeah, that's
Right, tweet us, everybody listening. Does muesli count as a cereal?
Yeah, I mean,
I suppose if granola in a bowl with milk on it counts as a cereal, then muesli probably does.
Yeah, I think if we're looking at the food wheel, it probably is a cereal. But we're not talking about this. We're talking about Spirit of the Rule.
Yeah, and there's very few cereals I
porridge.
Don't love.
Porridge would probably technically be a cereal as well, but we're not counting that either. This is you buy it in a box. Probably has Kellogg's on the side. Maybe something
probably
else.
Has an animal on the front of some kind. That's nothing related to the food.
Mm-hmm. What type of cereal do you go for? Are you like full chocolate man, sugar man?
I'm a Whim man. Whatever. Well, that and I'm a cheap man. So it's Whims and Offers from Tesco.
I've never even heard of Whims. What is Whims?
Oh, no, as in like I do it on a whim.
Oh,
whatever
right,
I feel
okay.
like
you
at
pick,
the time.
You pick out. I thought there was some mad cereal called Whim that I had just managed to avoid throughout my whole life.
There probably is in some country in the world somewhere.
If you were going to make Whim a cereal, if you're going to call your cereal Whim, it would be like really air. You know, like those really shit hard that go soft marshmallows you get in like Lucky Charms and stuff like that.
The Whims, or just all that.
Whims would be full of that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the whole spectrum. I'm there. I'm there for it. From your Bran Flakes to your Sultana brand to your Crunchy Nut Corn Flakes to your Weetabix minis with chocolate chips.
I could go Bran
chips.
Flakes with some raisins in it.
Jordan's Country Crisp's a good one. I really miss Golden Grahams. I really miss Golden Grahams.
Cinnamon.
That was a top-notch cereal.
Are they not cinnamony?
That was Cinnamon Grahams, which then turned into Curiously Cinnamon, which is a terrible name for a cereal. They should have called it Whimsically Cinnamon. But yeah, still a good cereal.
What was the one Golden Nuggets had that?
I was just about to say Golden
kid.
Nuggets.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a bit underwhelming, to be fair. Don't really like Wheatos all that much. Ricicles, they're good. That's a good cereal.
Yeah, that's a strong one. Do you think...
God, that's just I just love any cereal. It's all good.
Do you think the main character, Jason, in Shadow Complex, which is a game we're covering today, by the way, is a cereal man?
He's a serial murderer.
He is. So I was reading, because I managed to get through this game and have absolutely no idea what happened in the story whatsoever. So I was reading...
That's because it's dog shit.
It's really bad. And I was reading the story, and him and Claire, his new girlfriend, were going hiking in the woods. When we first meet them both, they're getting out of a jeep. There's no hiking happening. And then instantly things go awry. So there's
good
obviously
point.
A
they
road.
They never actually hiked.
No, they never hiked. And
they drove.
There's obviously like a clear track right up to this underground complex.
How else are all the shadows going to get in?
Yeah.
I don't know what they're called. Are they the shadows in the complex? Is that why it's called Shadow Complex?
Yeah, I think we'll find out as we dig into this. So,
but yeah, I mean it's obviously a very very Xbox 360 ass Xbox 360 game, but the story is one of the worst. I mean, we were taking the piss out of Bloodstained. This is far worse than that,
which is
it's so rote and cliche. It's ridiculous.
You're totally right, and I mean we'll get into this probably in more depth later when it comes up in my notes, because I'm not dynamic enough to be able to pick things out in my notes at will here, Alex, come on. But the story is connected to an IP which Epic, I'm assuming they still do, but at that time Epic owned an IP, and then they hired a man called David. Is it David
Sting?
He's called
it doesn't matter what he's called.
Well, that can be a stay tuned and you'll find it, but essentially they hired a full-time author to write some books around the IP they own for this. And this game runs concurrently to the first of, I think, two novels that they wrote within the world of Shadow Complex. So there you go. This is the worst, terrible story.
How?
Yeah, it comes from apparently a source material that warrants novelization. So, don't know what to say about that, really.
The hiking soldier with daddy problems, part one and part two.
So, with serial completed, Will we dive in?
Let's go.
Head first, like Scrooge McDuck into his money pile, except ours is a pile of various cereal types.
Ooh, I'd do that.
With or without milk. We'd have to have milk in it.
It'd be a lot less painful than diving into a load of coins.
Yeah, I don't know how he does it.
Yeah, raise your cereal bowls, everybody. Let's get going.
Let's go. So, for those who don't know, Shadow Complex... Don't do that. I'm going to be doing that all night. Shadow Complex is a Metroidvania style video game developed by a company called Chair Entertainment and published by Epic
Games. You
could
probably take the Vania out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're true. And yeah, my notes will back that up too. It was released on the 19th of August, 2009. I've written here that this is an odd game from several angles. Firstly, and I think, Alex, you pointed this out in a previous podcast. I cannot remember if it was a Gears of War podcast or a previous A Winner Is You podcast. This was published by Epic Games right in the middle of peak Gears of War, which is quite a left-of-field release, right?
What period of Gears was this?
So this was 2009. So
that before 3?
Before 3, is that right? So yeah, if we were 2006-odd for the first one.
The first one. Mm-hmm.
So like 7, 8, yeah, I'd say between 2 and 3. I guess.
Yeah.
Which is...
Because that was what this was sort of marketed heavily as. It's like, you know, from the people who do Gears of War comes...
Which is really odd.
A smaller arcade game. This must be one of the Summer of Arcade things too,
It
right?
was, yeah. It was the most popular Summer of Arcade game of 2009 mm-hmm. as well. Summer of Arcade was really cool. I just don't see that it works in a modern sort of gaming landscape where everything's digital. You could bring it back by giving it a focus on indies, perhaps. It would certainly have to change. It couldn't be what it was.
Yeah, it was obviously to fill that void in that period of the year where games didn't generally tend to come out. Whether that's changed since then,
perhaps.
I think it necessarily has.
No, I think traditionally the summer is a bit of a lull period, isn't it? But then you have latter day Mass Effect games started coming out January, February, March-ish because they sort of realised that they could sort of miss out the Christmas bum fight and then just sort of have that start of the year to their own and let their IPs breathe.
Yeah.
Which makes it even more confusing as to our previous conversation as to why they sent out Titanfall 2 to die. It makes it even less sense considering they've got previous for exploring the calendar. But yeah, you got some great games on Summer of Arcade as well. Limbo is a Summer of Arcade game. Obviously, Shadow Complex was, which is why I must have picked this up, because I went through a solid couple year period where I bought every Summer of Arcade game. Hydro Thunder was another one that was quite a well made game. I'm blanking on others. Alien Hominid, was that a Summer of Arcade?
Feels like it was, yeah.
That was another cool one.
And even Castle Crashers.
Castle Crashers, another one, yeah. That's a game I've played a bit of, but never sort of made it through.
Never even tried it.
Yeah. Plenty games.
Yeah, it was a really, as you said, it was great, but it was just sensible marketing. It was just giving smaller games chance to breathe away from all the big releases. It was filling the lull and the gap in gaming releases in the summer months with games that are shorter so that you're not, you know, having to worry about being inside while it's sunny. And they were cheaper, which means that you're not having to spend your money on massive games in the middle of the year when perhaps you were saving for the Christmas release schedule.
Sure.
So everything about it was spot on. And I'm surprised they don't really have a focus. I mean, I think this year, what have we got? We've got Final Fantasy 16 coming out. Street Fighter 6 is about to come out. So the summer's pretty heavy, really, this year.
And we spoke very briefly about that game that's coming out. People have started. What's it called? System Shock. People have started playing it on Twitch now, so it's imminent.
Yeah, so it comes out tomorrow, 1st of June, as of recording on PC.
A Wednesday.
That's the console versions.
That's an odd day.
I guess the PC schedule just doesn't match what we're used to. Maybe it's just always been weird, and we just don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Perhaps.
I swear it said June the 1st. It could be.
Because the American release dates tend to be a Tuesday, which would be
maybe it's today then.
And then European was traditionally Friday because that's how delivery schedules worked in our respective countries back in the day.
And also, surely everyone wants a video game for the weekend rather than a Tuesday
night.
Yes. And you've got the rest of the week to work. That's so dumb.
It also meant that we got the game late rather than early, which is annoying.
That was. annoying. Yes.
Yeah. Europe always got gypped in that regard, didn't we?
Forever, yeah. For time immemorial, we've always been the lowest thought of, except for when Rare released a game back in the day.
Good old Rare.
Pretty sure we got one of their N64 games first.
Good old Rare.
Which one it was. But there's one coming up for us, I think.
There is.
This month.
There is. This must have been developed on the Unreal Engine, which is a link we can sort of draw towards Gears of War. It runs pretty well. Looks like a Unreal Xbox 360 release, doesn't it? It's how
well
did you play?
Actually?
Sorry, carry on.
So you say, yeah, you're probably going to ask that similar question. You're saying it runs well. You played it basically the 360 version.
Yeah, I played emulated the 360 on your Xbox, one. Yeah,
and that ran okay. Did
absolutely
it?
Fine. Yeah, it looked the sound was really odd. Like when
did you play with headphones?
Yeah, when Jason and Claire spoke, it sounded like they were almost like slightly tinny, like they were talking through like someone trying to imitate a walkie-talkie is the only way I can think to describe it. It was really, really odd, but in terms of like actual gameplay, it was absolutely fine. How did the remaster
go? I found it
go?
Really weird that I think the remaster for the most part plays really, really well.
It looks nice.
60 FPS, obviously, yeah, upscaled to whatever it is now, 1080p. I don't think it's in 4K. I did have problems with the sound as well, in that it felt as if like the sound would pan from left to right, depending on where you were aiming. It's really weird.
Oh,
if you like, shot
weird
to the left, it seemed to just come out the left one more. It's really weird.
Yeah, that is odd.
Or even if he's on the left side of the screen, I didn't really want to hear it there, because to me, it should all just be central.
Well, if I was to shoot a gun,
seeing him in one bit.
If I was to shoot a gun here, I think both ears would hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
very weird. But yeah, I think some of the facial animations didn't hold up very well. But that's nothing to do with the remaster. That's not a complaint against that. The only problem I had, obviously, was the fucking state of it on the Epic Game Store.
Yeah, you had a bad, you had a nightmare with it, to the point that I thought it was maybe curtains for this podcast.
No. I mean, like I said, I already have it on 360. I was just wanting to play the more updated version.
The better version, yeah.
And I can't remember what happened. Oh, the PC version just kept opening at a weird resolution. And even after I changed the default in the config file, it still did it after a couple of sessions. And also then, yeah, the controller support for it. Every time I crouched, he also dropped a grenade. So I couldn't crouch or go in any vents without him blowing himself up. Like, this is literally unplayable. But luckily, I went on ENBA or something, ENEBA, got myself an Argentinian Xbox Series X code for £3.85, used a VPN to redeam it on my account in Argentina.
No, yeah, what you mean is you've got a flight to Argentina where your auntie lives, plugged in your Xbox.
Yes, Phil Spencer, yes. That's what I did.
If Nord would like to sponsor us, we're up for it.
Yeah, because I didn't use that. So, you know, if you want me to use that Nord, you're going to have to pay me to do it.
Exactly.
Because I'm not paying.
The odd sort of way this game, to me, in my mind at least, came together, continues with it, was developed by, as I've mentioned before, Chair Entertainment, who I think, I had a look through their development history, I think it's fair to say, and maybe kind to say, they've had an eclectic development history. So their first game...
Have they now? Because I don't remember anything they did, and I remember laughing when I kept seeing Chair every time I loaded it up, as in like...
Well, you've definitely heard of some of these games, and I think by the time we go through a couple of these games, which won't take long, you'll be rather confused as to how this game, one, came out, was developed by these guys and came out in a functional state, because it's really odd. But yeah, the first game
was still going.
Yeah, yep. Apparently, okay. Apparently, the first game was in 2007. They released Undertow, which seemed pretty well reasonably received. Then Shadow Complex came out in 2009, and then between the years of 2010 and 2013, they went off to mobile to do the Infinity Blade series. And then
were they owned by Epic then?
They seem to be an Epic
subsidiary.
Yeah, I don't know if they still are or aren't. And then the last game they released was back in 2018, which was Battle Breakers. And I think I've heard of that. I should have googled this before. But Battle Breakers is I'm sure it's a live service game that basically tried to compete with Overwatch and had its lunch eaten. So, but then that...
Well, I'm seeing Battle Breakers Android. So
they would have released the mobile version, which makes more sense, because I think Battle Breakers Well, I didn't think
it's still
it was
Epic
them.
Games, though.
Yeah. And then...
That's so terrible.
Wikipedia also tells me they're currently working on another mobile game called Spy Jinx, but the release date for this is TBA. I've never heard of it. I don't know if you have. So I gave it a Google this morning, and it appears to be a turn-based mobile arena combat game that has a gameplay trailer for 2020 and not much else. So who knows what that game's doing?
This must be their greatest achievement.
I mean,
I know Infinity Blade was actually quite well thought of as well.
Probably Infinity Blade made them a lot of money, which is probably why they've managed to go fail or released a failed Battlebreakers game in 2018 and then do nothing.
Surely it made Epic a lot of money, I would have thought.
Yeah, you would. Oh, I don't know how.
Well, maybe that's why Epic keep them around, I suppose. Keep employing them.
But yeah, it's an odd, a really odd company. A game that doesn't seem to fit in any way with the sort of ethos or the direction or even the skills of the company and those that probably worked at the company. But
which I guess proves that it seems like a labor of love. Certainly it's made by people who have an extreme fondness for a specific video game. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll probably repeat myself later in my notes, but because this sold so well for them or did pretty well for them. Sold like 500,000 copies or something like that. But for the budget, and I think it took 18 months to make, I think it was fairly profitable and well-received. They started doing a prototype for a sequel at the same time as they started doing something else, which again we'll get to, I've forgotten. But they ended up going with Infinity Blade because they timed that in release with the iPhone 4 at the time, and they thought that having a game that they were looking to make up, essentially like sold as a graphical powerhouse for phones, obviously thought that they could make more money, and they probably did. They spawned three games, and it was a fairly well thought of series. I remember playing it.
It was
my way home from uni on the train. So yeah, I played it.
Yeah, for sure.
Had a great time with it. Anyway, Alex, we've done a little bit, but I thought this is probably a good chance to bring you in before I start talking about the plot. Do you want to give us your sort of overarching thoughts and feelings in the game? You said you were whelmed by it, but I think you generally liked it, had fun with it. I don't know. I don't want to speak for you.
I think it's lovely, snappy, five or so hours of really sort of focused, concise Metroid gameplay. Very, very similar to how those things play in terms of like almost everything was very similar. Like it seemed borrowed in terms of like the types of weapons that you get, the way that they're colored for certain colored doors, the way that it moved and felt seems like it probably influenced some of the sort of 2.5D Metroid games that came out years later. I found the only thing that was probably slightly disappointing looking back at it is maybe the gunplay is not as tight as I remembered and can be quite fiddly when they start to try and introduce a 3D plane of having to shoot guys in the background. I found that a real struggle to actually get him to look sort of away from the camera rather than left or right. When you're introducing that field, that depth of field, I found it really difficult to actually shoot people in the distance. And the auto aim I found a bit fiddly too.
I found often if you were right up on them, you didn't like that, and you would want to move away a bit, and then the auto sort of shot would kick in a bit. I think I've written it a couple.
He also likes shooting boxes as well. If there's boxes around enemies, he would probably like aim at the box instead for a little bit. It's also like really had some quite funny glitches that I saw as well. Like when his body would completely warp if you try and move him too quickly. Maybe that the 3D modeling wasn't quite up to snuff in terms of like trying to get you to allow you to switch back and forward really, really quickly from left to right and having to basically rotate him 180 degrees at very quick speeds. It seemed to get caught up on itself that you wouldn't get with like a traditional 2D sprite. This was like this 3D model seemed to struggle with that as well. But it was quite funny.
Yeah. I was going to say, I encountered a few similar bugs as well, but nothing was particularly game-breaking. I think the worst bug any of us, and I assume it was a bug that any of us encountered, was when you lost control of the blue line, and then you essentially didn't know where you were going for a while.
No, that was me.
That was you. Did you figure out what happened?
Yeah. So right after you get the most powerful gun in the game, mm-hmm. You're supposed to go right, and I think I turned around and went left, and then went so far in a different direction that I forgot that I had to go back. Basically, the next room after you get that gun is where you go see Claire getting hauled away, and the blue line shows up. But I went left, buggered myself, went all the way around the left-hand side of the map, realizing there's no way to go right other than the way that I just was a room away from. But then when I went all the way back to that room where I got the gun, the next room to the right was the progression of the story, and the blue line came back.
And so, when you have to fight those two sort of mech suit lads at the same time? Is that that bit?
Good, yeah, hardest part of the game, hands down.
Yeah. I think I've mentioned it a few times in my notes, but the thing I came away from this in terms of like an overall feeling is that it, to me, I don't know, feel free to tell me I'm speaking shit, but like I felt that this was almost like baby's first Metroidvania game.
Totally.
It was really, really simple in a way that sort of allowed me to, like, I feel like if I played this years ago, it would have sort of given me a leg up and a sort of, don't know, as acted as maybe a gateway drug into the more complicated versions of the game and things that I've struggled with the genre in the last year or so that we've been poking about in here, that maybe this would have helped sort of let me in, because like there's it tells you where to go and there's not a huge variety in stuff that you've got to do. You've got to like pick up the stuff that you've got to pick up. It's really clear where you have to use it and there's not a huge amount of it. So yeah, I that's kind of where I came away from it. I think it's a mostly solid game that is a pretty good time for the 5 or so hours that it takes to play. There's nothing really that lives long, particularly in the memory, but that doesn't mean that I didn't have a good time with it. It's just a totally competent game.
Yeah, it is. And I think if you look at the state of Metroid specifically in 2009, the last actual game you had was Metroid Prime 3, 2007 on the Wii. The last sort of 2D one that you had was 2004. So you're 5 years without a traditional Metroid game. And then the next year, Metroid Other M, everybody seems to hate that. So if you're talking about the critical reception that it got at the time, the way we look at it now is obviously a way, which is, you're absolutely right, it seems quite basic. It's like, say, it's like 4 or 5 hours to beat it. So it's really not like the epic that Bloodstained was, where we're talking, you know, 20 hours or so, or even Symphony of the Night, really, or even Super Metroid.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much felt like a developer who just really liked those games, wanted to play some more, and nobody else was making them. So I thought, yeah, we'll just do one ourselves. And it's their first go at it. They obviously had like the kernel of the idea of how they wanted to fit things together. A lot of basis on verticality.
Yeah.
In terms of like how you can jump up seems to be the way that they blocked off a lot of the game. But
do you think some of the
nothing wrong with it?
No. Do you think?
I think it got a lot of praise because there was an empty.
That's what I was about to ask. Do you think part of its success and good like positive reception was because it hit a fairly hungry user base? I mean, I think we're well established at this point that the Metroidvania series is, I mean, it's a growing and pretty big niche, but it's still a niche within the games industry. That's why Nintendo don't churn out Metroid games left and right, because they don't sell as well as a Zelda or a Mario Kart or a Mario. And this game was built on a fairly shoestring budget by the sounds of it, on a short lead time, and it came out at a time where the fans of this genre were underserved and allowed them to make a game that was commercially successful and sort of fed that niche, I guess, which I think, I wonder in hindsight if that's part of the reason that it's so well received.
Yeah, because it won awards and everything.
It did.
But yeah, I mean, Metroid Samus Returns for the 3DS didn't come out till 2017, so even Nintendo didn't make another proper Metroid for 7 years. Sorry, 8 years after this came out. So
yeah,
that did feel like, outside of Igarashi that we spoke about on the last episode, that this was like the start of this boom or mini boom that Metroidvania games have had, especially in the indie space. It seemed to be like the real go-to genre that people were picking for a lot of like the latter PS4 era or mid to late PS4 era.
And now we just need people to get sick of Nintendo not doing anything and go off and make F-Zero X for something else. Yeah. Because that's the one that they keep ignoring, right? Although I seen someone, I got sent a tweet by a friend that there's a director that made District 9, that movie. He's been teasing a Wipeout. Yeah, he's been teasing a Wipeout movie. I'm not sure what to make of that. That's a really
odd.
Got
to be better than the Gran Turismo movie.
Oh my
right?
God. Well, that's the one that jumped to mind. I was like, really? These are the IP we're going for now. Following The Last of Us, you're going Gran Turismo and Wipeout. It's an interesting. What is Wipeout just going to be like? I don't know. I don't know any of the lore, but all my sort of
point. Is there any?
Oh, the bet there is. My draw for Wipeout, my sort of memory for Wipeout is that they marketed it in nightclubs and in the 90s.
Yeah, they did.
Because of because that's PlayStation were going edgy back in those days.
They were. It had a rocking dance soundtrack, so that was where it went.
Alex, it's time. Let's just get the plot out of the way. Let's just do this.
Fucking Christ.
So, this is something I never realised about the game, mainly because, this is what I was being nice, obviously, when I wrote this, but mainly because, at least to me, the plot felt quite, dare I say, uninspired. I think that's selling it a little short there. But apparently, during an E3 interview, Epic said that the game is set in the literary universe created by Orson Scott Card. That's the name I couldn't remember. I don't know who he is, but anyway, he's an author. And it running parallel to his novel called Empire, and this would fit neatly into the beginning of the second book in the series, which is called Hidden Empire. So if you want to go and find out about the lore of Shadow Complex, go and find Orson Scott Card's Empire, and then you can read Hidden Empire afterwards. Anyway, Jason, the main protagonist, is voiced by industry veteran Nolan North, who we all know from pretty much every game ever made, such as Nathan Drake in Uncharted, Desmond in Assassin's Creed, the Penguin from the Batman Arkham games, and of course he plays David in The Last of Us. As
Penguin in the Batman Arkham games, the one time he actually acted.
Yeah, the one time he did anything other than his normal Nolan North voice.
Yep.
Jason,
a bloody good job he did too, actually.
He did a very good job. As he and his new girlfriend Claire, who is voiced by a lady called Eliza Jane Schneider, who we'll have heard of in games like Prey, Kingdom Hearts, Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Anyway, they go backpacking into the mountains. I don't know if you're driving a Jeep into the woods counts as backpacking, but we'll let that slide for the moment. Once there, they stumble across some caverns that they decide to explore, at which point Claire is seemingly kidnapped by a group of armed soldiers and taken inside an underground complex that Jason and Claire find as they sort of go deeper into the... Well, Jason does. Claire's too busy getting dragged inside. As the game progresses, it becomes apparent that this underground army that they find are preparing to launch a false flag operation and attack the United States to cause a civil war in an effort to take charge and return America to former glories.
But they want to be seen as the good guys. Don't forget that.
They do. Yeah, that was probably my favorite bit. The whole plot when you're sneaking through that vent and you hear them in their canteen with no noises, no like clinking of cutlery, just two guys in a canteen.
It's not all about guns and might. I want them to think we're the good guys. Oh, now I sympathize with you, sir. Please continue.
Following this, the game's event unfolds as Jason explores the base, gaining abilities along the way to help him stop events unfolding as planned, culminating in the destruction of the base and the death of the army's leader, Commander Lucius, nice and subtle there, and the rescuing of Claire. At the end of the game, it's revealed that...
Well, yeah, but she kind of rescues herself, right?
Yeah, so... She shoots Lucius.
Hmm.
At the end of the game, it's revealed that Claire is a government agent working to stop the terrorists and had used Jason, which this is where it gets mad, Jason as a pawn in her game to bring them down. So this is, the weird bit about this, I'm assuming you do remember this, is the flashbacks you started to get while you're playing this game, where his dad's like...
Hilarious.
He's like, oh, you've trained for this all your life. And he's like, no, I was a kid and you've just put me through this like murder school because his dad was...
Yeah, I can't kill a man, Dad. Yeah. and then later on he's like, you proud of me, Dad? Oh my god,
it was so weird. Absolutely bizarre.
I really hope he got his end away, because
well, she thought he had cute
eyes. What an extreme level of effort he had to put in there. That's more than any man I've ever known has had to put in. Unless, of course, he already had, and in which case she's kind of like a James Bond kind of slutty spy.
I think so.
Puts out in terms, you know, she sleeps with you, then you do the killing.
I think that, yeah. She's like, yeah, because...
Imagine if he was just like, I don't want to go hiking.
Yeah, I don't
fancy. Or he sprained his ankle. Like, I can't... The physio says I've got to rest it for a week. She's like, yeah, but they're going to... We have to go hiking in case there's a war. Why would there be a war? I don't know. Let's just go to the woods. Fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Every bit about it was just like so amateurish. It was so funny. His quips were terrible.
Yeah.
The bit where I'd completely forgotten the whole part of like, it's okay. He's trained to be a soldier. That's why he's so good at taking fire with no armor on.
Yeah.
Just running around, getting shot at by helicopters and not dying immediately or pissing his pants and going home. He's trained for this, boys.
Yes. As I've already mentioned, if anyone's interested in this story, you can read the novel Empire, folks. By Orson Scott Card.
That's got to be a ride. If it's anything on the quality of this.
I'm going to go and check after this and see if it's on Audible. I don't want to read it, but I'll listen to it. If it's on there, I might check. I might listen to it and check back in a future episode.
Read by Nolan North.
I hope. Oh, read by Nolan North would be great.
Yeah.
So in the novel Empire, the president is assassinated, and that is just as the Civil War is about to start. I don't know. I wonder if the game's mentioned in any way that just some renegade hillwalker just. Explodes an entire base.
I also absolutely love when you confront the bad guy at the end and he's like, oh, we've already killed the vice president. Why are you fucking around, you idiot? Is that but the Empire was the prequel to the game, right?
It runs concurrently. So as this book's going on, Jason is running amok in the Shadow Complex with Claire having been injected with some sort of stop your legs working serum.
Oh yeah, but don't worry. She'll just offer for you to put behind some cabinets.
Yeah.
Stash me over behind those cabinets for 4 hours. Well, you go kill some people. I'll wait. Ridiculous. Everything about the story is awful. Yeah, that's weird though, because if the guy's bragging that they've killed the vice president, then when surely you're not going to do that after the president.
Yeah.
Then he wouldn't be the vice president. He'd be the president anyway. So
you've got to take the vice president out, then the president. I don't know. Maybe
that's how I do it. Yeah, you've got to go hierarchical.
Bottom to top.
Yeah, you've got to move up the ladder with your assassinations.
You've got to earn the right to go for the president.
Yeah, he's like the final boss. Yeah. You've got to kill Bowser Jr. before you can kill Bowser. I wonder, so maybe the book doesn't sound as concurrent as I would have thought, unless, yeah, I'm just reading too much into what should not be read into, ever, by anyone.
Did you ever link up what was going on at the start? You know, at the start of the game where you're some completely different character, and then some, like...
Oh, yeah!
Unattached events take place, and then...
Wait, is that where the vice president dies?
Maybe that's where the vice president dies.
Was he standing under that helicopter you shoot down?
Oh, maybe.
Like, hey,
do you know what,
hey,
do you know what make the story even better is if you were the vice president in that suit.
Yeah, that is the game Metal Wolf Chaos, isn't it, by FromSoft, you're the president in a mech. Yeah.
So it is. I forgot all about that game.
We're going to play that one day.
We're going to have to. Apparently, that maybe this is the ending that we should have done, Alex. There's a non-canonical ending where midway through the game, Jason can just return to his car and drive away.
Yeah, there we go. That's what I was saying a minute ago.
It's like stuff this.
Well, I'm going to play the whole thing again and do it that way.
Yeah.
What am I doing? She wasn't even that hot. I'm getting the fuck
out
of here.
It's not worth it. It's not worth it.
Yeah. I wonder if she was nagging me all the time.
Maybe it's not. I wonder if it's his Jeep.
Yeah.
No one bothers to disable the Jeep at any point. Let's not pick holes. It's an epic story. It's a story of epic.
It's one hole. It's a hole. You can't pick holes in what is already one massive hole.
You cannot
hole.
Pick holes in a hole. That is...
No.
That is fact, ladies and gentlemen.
Put that on a t-shirt.
That's why you come to a winner's you for knowledge bombs. Just like that. My next question was going to be to ask you about your thoughts of the story, but I feel like we've largely covered it. It's absolute nonsense, but kind of funny.
Yeah. No, they wrote it on a napkin on a lunch break.
Yeah.
And went, okay, so chick brings him hiking, stumbles across secret base of evil guys trying to start a war. Turns out she's a spy and she made him be there. Also, he's a soldier, kinda.
A child soldier. It's like an uninitiated Master Chief.
Maybe it's like one of them, you know, subconscious ones, you know, where they have to say their word, their trigger word, and then
he just goes full mental, yeah.
Yeah, maybe she said it in the Jeep on the way there.
Starts windmilling.
I love how she's like, she conveniently leaves the hiking gear for him, and then all of a sudden he's like an amazing climber. Now he's
absolute brute, yeah.
Oh yeah, you've got my hiking gear. I thought I saw you scaling a fucking waterfall. Yeah, well, if I hadn't found the bag, you know.
What a game. Anyway, the bit that's actually fun about this game is gameplay. So let's move on to that now.
Big time.
So this game, as we've already discussed, it's presented in 2.5D. Apparently the game is built and rendered in 3D, but the player can only move in two dimensions. I think part of this is obviously it's probably easier, right? I remember there being discussion about games around about this area. Maybe it was actually the Bloodstained games that started this, which is obviously about 10 years later, but there was a chat about how the sort of expertise about making 2D sprites was leaving the industry, and actually it's easier now to hire people that do 3D rendered models and just make the game 2D, because that's how the industry's gone. And actually, I'm assuming that there's been a bit of a renaissance in 2D sprites, because they're everywhere now, but at the time people were only knew how to work in 3D, which is possibly why this game looks and plays how it does. But that's just a guess. So like I also saying that I suppose this allows for the depth of field that they use in the game, which again we've touched on the enemies in the background, so you can shoot them and they also shoot about you. You can also see enemies coming out doors in the background, and it doesn't actually really change any. The only time it actually affects gameplay is when you've got to maybe jump on a turret gun, for example.
Which of course you have, hence my saying it was an Xbox 360 as
absolutely. The player uses the right control stick to aim Jason's weapons. As the player progresses through the game, the player is rewarded with experience points as well as new tools and items to help the player traverse the world and discover new areas.
Did you ever figure out what you were doing to get XP?
No.
Because I felt like I kept leveling up when I just basically like
climbed a wall. Yeah, I'd be like walking in a straight line and be like, level up. Don't know.
Yeah, what?
I'll take it though.
Yeah. Although, for what? Stamina goes up. What do you mean stamina?
Yeah, so I was digging into this. Apparently,
he's not getting tired.
No, he's not.
Accuracy include what? It's an auto aim.
Yeah, the accuracy one's a funny one because I never felt him get more accurate as the game went on.
No,
but apparently, if you were to think after playing this, right, I want nothing more than to restart Shadow Complex from the beginning. You would lose all the items that you had collected through the game, but you would keep your experience and level. So it must do something. But what it does, I never figured that out quite.
Yeah, I saw, I was watching a speed run or two of it today, and they do it in like New Game Plus, because there's something weird about the file system if you start a new save, and the guy was like level 192 or something.
Bloody hell.
You could beat the game in like 5 minutes.
Can you?
Yeah.
I guess.
I can't remember how they managed to do it, but they basically got foam before they even got the pistol. And then if you have like the foam without a gun, it fires the foam like sort of behind him. And so they get to this bit, and I can't remember whereabouts it is, but they basically just fire enough bits of foam that's literally behind him, not like to the left or right, as in 3D behind him, that it then they pile so many of them in a row that it pushes him towards the camera, and then you can like jump out of bounds because you're like off the
amazing
plane.
Amazing. I'm gonna have to go look this up.
And sequence break it, that's the word. And then you do it, and you get right up to the final bit in that, you know, the room that starts to blow up, and you just leg it out, shoot the nukes, and the game's over. You basically do nothing in the game.
I ran the wrong way.
It's mad.
When that room blew up, because there was a bit in the corner of the map that I hadn't uncovered, so I was like, I need to get that. And then I died.
My desire to explore all the bits of that room did the exact same to me as well. I thought, well, I wonder what's happening over on the left, first of all. Partly because I didn't understand the boss fight, to be honest. There's so much mad shit going on, I didn't realise what I was even supposed to be doing.
No, I had to actually look up what I was meant to be doing because I didn't absorb what it wanted me to do. And then when I figured out what I had to do and then realised that I could just sort of crouch on a platform and nobody could get to me, I just like activated the missile, crouched and hid until it had set itself up, jumped out, fired it, and then ran off, did the next one, rinse, repeat. The AI is not intelligent in this game.
No.
It is not. Did you mess about with the Proving Grounds at all? Apparently the Proving Grounds is like, it came out as DLC later on, but it was in my game, so, and I wouldn't have bought it, so I don't know how I've got it. It basically, in addition to the main campaign, the game also has challenge levels that they named the Proving Grounds, for which for the most part require the player to make it from the start of like an area to the end, and then so it'll be like parts of the level, and they'll only give you certain tools and resources to get there, and you've got to try and get out without getting yourself killed.
Oh, that sounds quite fun.
It does sound quite fun, but yeah, I never went near that.
I assumed it was a tutorial, so I didn't bother.
I think we've covered this again, but maybe just in case there's something else that you want to discuss. You generally enjoyed the gameplay. It was totally fine.
Yeah, I enjoyed the way that it evoked memories of things like Metroid, where you are finding weapon upgrades and movement upgrades. You know, once you get the super fast running thing, that opened up some pretty wacky shit.
Like super running fast on the ceilings running was fun. And stuff. Yeah. How do you think the sort of the way the game unfolds compares to like the more established Vania games? It's obviously not as good, right? Like Bloodstained's clearly a superior game.
Yeah. It's just a product of its development, I think, as you suggested earlier. It was on a shoestring budget, short lead time, small team. It's therefore really, really quick to move you from part to part and area to area, and it gives you which you can turn off. It gives you an objective marker.
Yeah.
So it really just felt like it just wants you to kind of smash through it as quickly as possible and be this like bite-sized Metroidvania to kind of kickstart a bit of a movement or something into more people making games like that, which it obviously did.
Yeah, and it did, and then Epic never really capitalized on that. I don't really think they've ever done anything with it since.
No, absolutely not. But yeah, you could tell that the developing team took the source material or took their influences like to heart, and they really did care about making a really solid version of one of these games. So I don't have a problem with it being short.
I think short is good in this instance.
Yeah, I think the only problem I had was just some of the shooting felt a bit finicky and difficult to actually get the auto aim to look at who I want, which again, you can turn off. So perhaps I could be better if I didn't have that, and perhaps it'd be better if I used a keyboard and mouse on the PC. I don't know.
I was constantly grenading and missiling myself. Injuring myself all the time, yeah. Some of the foam platforming was a pain in the ass, but I think I was trying to think of like what my favorite thing is, but they're kind of all a missile is the missile, really. The grenades are the grenades. The final gun you get is quite fun to use. It's sort of
that just melts people.
Yeah. But
most of the bosses you could just spam grenades at them for a bit and
get behind them and spam a grenade. Easy. Yeah. They really were quite easy.
One of like the big sort of Metal Gear-y style robot things, I remember I ended up being able to stand on its head and it couldn't get me off, so I was just shooting grenades downwards and it didn't hit me once. I was just kind of stood on it. I think I took a video of it for you. I'll send it to you.
The only sort of, I don't know if it was a boss, but like sort of the hyper-powered enemy that I would encounter that gave me any... It never really, I was going to say gave me problems. It never gave me problems. It just kept catching me. There was one of the bigger mechs that would squirt foam out of his ass that would freeze you in place. I constantly got caught by that bloody thing. Constantly. Yeah, I was just trying to get an extra shot off. But I don't know. The bosses were what they were. They're nothing really special.
No.
A lot of the time, I brute forced them. No, I brute forced, I think, most of them just by didn't really hide too much. I just spammed grenades and missiles at them quicker than they could at me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of what I've read, people do seem to think that this game is a tad easy.
Yeah, which it probably is.
It's impossible to disagree with that. It's not that much of a challenge.
Are you ultimately in favour or pro or anti, sorry, the blue line, the introduction of the blue line?
Having had it not show up at one point in the game and then getting lost for an hour, I'm a fan of it.
I'm trying to think, because what did Bloodstain do? It had a place to go, right? But it didn't tell you how to get there. It would have a dot on the screen, is that right? I'm trying to remember, and I couldn't, like this morning.
I can't remember if it does or it doesn't. I'm not sure that it does.
Sort of leaves it up to you.
I actually thought that the way that they... One of the strongest things in favour for this game is that the explorative parts where you're going to be going off the beaten track and getting upgrades or the little upgrades to your armour or your grenades or your missiles, I felt like the blue line funneled you through areas where you could just sneak off for a few minutes to go like a couple of rooms away and back. I felt like it did that really, really well.
Yeah, you're right.
Where the backtracking never really felt like massively chore-like. I mean, I didn't get everything, so if I probably wanted to, then maybe it would have been.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like if you actually follow the blue line and you just sort of take a quick look at the map either side of the blue line for a couple of squares, you're going to have question marks on there. I thought the map actually was very strong, other than I don't know why sometimes if I'd found something that was like blocked off by red or purple, it didn't then mark my map that's what was blocking that way.
Yeah, I noticed that. It was
and I'd
inconsistent.
End up going back to the same bit and being like, oh, well, this is fucking red again.
Yeah.
Why does it just look like it's a door? But the question mark thing and then changing the question mark into a dot once you've got the item in that area, was a really nice touch.
Yeah, I'm into quality of life stuff like that. If I found it once, just let me know it's there and I can come back and get it when I'm ready. Yeah, I'm a big fan of that. But you're right, the map sort of marking of the doors was quite inconsistent at times.
It seemed to be obsessed with green. It never really wanted to show me anything. I mean, it would show me red doors, but anything like in the environment that, you know, like a vent or something that had red or purple, it would just never show it on the map, which is a shame. Again, that could be something you could turn off, like have it as a toggle, but it would be, I don't know if there would be anybody out there who would logically think it's a good idea to not show you something on your map that you've already seen, or give you a way to mark at least your map. If you've seen something the other side of the entire game world that has to be unlocked by a certain item, just remind me, because my sense of direction is pretty bad. I'm getting old. Like, I don't want to be the complete opposite side of the map and be like, oh, I should do some backtracking and then have to look at basically a blank canvas and try and remember which square out of the 400 has the purple thing in it. Just show me.
Well, yeah,
it's not going to make your game too easy.
It doesn't make the game too easy. It does. It's just a quality of life improvement. I mean, like, to me, like, the day... I mean, for me personally, obviously, there's still kids, but... exist in the world, but like the days are gone where I've got entire summers that I can just sit and play a game for an entire day. Like, my time is, I feel it's a constant struggle in my life to feel like I'm being productive in my time. So to have me milling about constantly in a world that was quite simple and didn't really warrant exploration and discovery, like another game we're playing just now, Zelda, for example, like, just let me know where it is and let me go to it and get it, and then let's move on. I started actually trying to collect different bits and pieces, so I started going back looking for collectibles and stuff, but it's so finicky to move around. There's like certain like funnels that the map has that you're basically 100%. One way through, and sometimes you'd think you were next to something, but then you try and like eyeball a path to it and you're like, I've got to go all the way around, and I was like, nah, I cannot be bothered. So then I just went and finished the game after that. But I got my fun out of it.
It would do like the question mark in a square, and you'd be in that square for absolutely ages, like looking everywhere. Yeah. And then you would, as you say, you'd realize that you had to be coming at it from the completely opposite direction of that square, because it technically wasn't in anywhere that you were. It was above it, but it still counted it as the same square. Yeah. That's, and as you say, the actual like reward for exploration didn't feel valid. Like the item you get, fine, mm-hmm. but what's actually going to happen when you're backtracking is, as happens with a lot of these games, you're just going to get respawning enemies that you've already killed like 30 times already. You're not going to see anything new. A lot of the time, you're going to be crawling through fucking vents very slowly.
It's not slowly, like
you say, as you say, Zelda, something different might happen if you go over there. If you just get lost and go that way, something's going to happen. Whereas this, you're just specifically going to see the same thing happen that you've seen like 10 times already. And you're just going to be like, oh, yeah, I remember I've got to kill all these guys if I want to go through this room that I'm trying to quickly get through. And if I've actually gone the wrong way, I'll have to go back through the room again and kill them again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it could have used a bit more quality of life the way that I would say Bloodstained probably has, where it allows you to A, mark your map, and B, would show you things like the things for the killing enemies quest. Little green scroll on the bit of the map that it's in.
There's also fast travel points to the different areas of the map, which that would have been nice because they color-coded the map. But why, I don't know. So it would have been nice even if there was like one fast travel point in each color-coded section that would just make things a little bit more smooth.
Yeah, because even the old Metroid games have that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're absolutely right. What a shit game.
2 out of 10. I think that's kind of it. So the development of this game, I think, is going to be quite interesting. So the creative director of Chair is a man called Donald Mustard, which is a fantastic name, by the way.
That is outstanding.
Perhaps unsurprisingly, during several interviews, he was quite readily and eager to tell people that the gameplay of Super Metroid was a massive sort of... It was a huge sort of... What's the word? Why am I blanking on this? It was
influence.
Influence on the game.
Donald Mustard.
He thinks Super Metroid is a game that he considers to be the pinnacle of 2D game design. So I've put in a question here. Alex, this is a question I'm just going to drop on you. What would you give that award to as the pinnacle of 2D game? And just because of the game that we're talking about, let's keep it to Metroidvanias because we don't want to start talking about Super Mario World.
Mario and things World.
Because like, that's the obvious answer, right?
Symphony of the Night.
I think it's Symphony of the Night's one, but I think there probably is a bunch of people that would say Super Metroid, right? The Super Metroid, definitely. And this is one, because my introduction to Metroidvanias is basically comes through you. Like, you know how there's like people that are fantasy people or sci-fi people? Are there people that are like Metroid people or Castlevania people, or do they just, everyone just like them all?
I wonder, yeah. There must be some. It'd be weird to see if there's like some sort of like secret underground rivalry between those two games.
Because if you were to ask me, like I like both games or both IPs, but I think I'm definitely more fond of the Castlevania games than I am the Metroid games.
Do you think like one of the two head honchos of these two series, is it Sakamoto, the Metroid guy,
Pass. And
Igarashi? Maybe, do we think one of them is like absolutely fuming that they've got to share a fucking genre title with their heated rival?
I know.
Like, why can't it just be called Castlevania games? Why has it got to be called Metroid? Maybe that's why search action is a thing. They're just like,
yeah, maybe.
Agree to disagree. Bygones be bygones. We'll call it something different, shall we?
Let's call it search action. Then everyone just continues to ignore them and call them Metroidvanias.
Yeah.
Have you played the Castlevania games that go off in a totally wild direction? There was the ones on, was it the Xbox 360 era that were like third person?
Lords of Shadow?
Yeah.
Lords of Shadow 1 is fucking wicked.
Is it anything like a Castlevania game, or is it just a third person Devil May Cry?
It's very like God of War.
Oh, is it?
But there are elements of it, yeah. There's elements of getting a weapon that then allows you to backtrack and unlock something different, as far as I can remember. But there's a lot of, sort of emphasis on combat and sort of set pieces. Some incredibly, like, massive Titan-like bosses, like Shadow of the Colossus-style stuff in that game. It's a really underrated game.
I'd love to dabble with those ones. Maybe I will one day. Hopefully. There's so many games that I want to have
maybe
done
next
that
May.
With. Maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, I just said maybe. That's awful. Anyway.
Nice.
To hit home the angle that, like, Donald Mustard was shooting for, apparently the developers spent the first month of development playing Metroid games so that they knew the languages, the concepts that they would emulate. I guess that's pretty, I don't know how standard that is in the games industry, but yeah, sit down and play this type of game that we're trying to make one of is probably a good idea.
I mean, it's unashamed in its focus, but hey, fine, you did what you made one of those.
I was going to say, do you think they were successful in that regard?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just more, I'm going to keep saying it, but it's just more simple version of one of those, but it does feel like one of those. Apparently the developers drew out the levels, i.e. the world map, so to speak, on graph paper, and then they would sit and run the levels on this graph paper to make sure that the players were unlocking things in the correct order and at the right time. About 6 months.
There is a real skill to that, and that is why, you know, we've been a little bit sort of facetious tonight, but there is a real skill to making like a coherent,
yeah,
understandable Metroidvania game that, as I said earlier, like aids in your progression and your exploration by just funneling you perfectly through. Like, I know the most recent Metroid Dread, that actually does a lot of like sort of artificial blocking of certain areas, so it'll make something like explode and then debris will block you off from going back a certain way because it wants you to push forwards and not backtrack because it's going to waste your time. So to avoid that, they did a lot of like smoke and mirrors in that game to push you in the direction they want you to go. This game doesn't do that, but it doesn't necessarily need to, because I felt like the flow was mostly really straightforward and understandable.
You're right.
Because getting lost in these games is a ball ache, and it's not fun.
No.
Nobody likes that.
You're right, and I actually didn't recognize it at the time, but it's maybe one of these things that if it's done right, you shouldn't recognize it. It's one of these things
you should just
sort of play and enjoy, but you're right. Like, you need to be guiding the player without them feeling like they're being led. Because as soon as they're aware that they're being led, then the game loses some of the mystique and the sort of passion, not passion, it loses some of the magic that these games bring with them. I mean, at their heart, right, these games are people that are like exploding things, right? And you want to feel like you're discovering the secrets and uncovering the things on your own, and they make you feel smart and they make you feel like you're uncovering this world organically when actually you're being funneled in a specific direction.
Yeah, I know some people did complain about that in Dread, that it potentially did look a bit too obvious when they were trying to put a wall in front of you going back again and getting lost in your exploration. But for me, those kind of quality of life things, if you can embed it within what appears to be a gameplay facet or something happening story related, that's perfect, because I'll get the hint from that. I won't get the hint if I go and spend an hour going through the same rooms again all the way to the opposite side of the map and realize I shouldn't be here, and actually I should have gone all the way a different way. That's the worst feeling in these games, and if they can help me avoid that, perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've done a good game.
You have done it well. About 6 months into development, apparently Donald Mustard says that they had to make what he describes as their first big change to design of the game by reducing the jump height. And the team wanted the unlockable power-ups to be able to be used anywhere at any time, which meant that a substantial rework of the layout of the maps had to be done. Mustard says that this was painful but necessary step to make the game more enjoyable. Still, by the time the game was finished, Mustard reckons that about 85% of the original map made it into the final game in some shape, form, or other, which I think is testament to, well, partly the short development cycle, but also what you were just saying, in that there is a real skill to map design, and they'd clearly nailed their design before they actually started work in earnest making the game a game, right?
Yeah. Yeah. In the speedruns I was watching, there is a way to do like some kind of a double jump before you get the jetpack. Apparently, if you're quick enough, you can effectively do an extra half of his height for a regular jump. And that's a big way people speedrun this game in like 15, 20 minutes without glitches.
I'm going to go and find the speedrun
and stuff. I'll send it to you.
Okay, that'd be great.
It's only 15 minutes.
Yeah,
so
I'll watch it in bed. Apparently, one thing that Mustard wanted to avoid, however, is he felt that when it comes to Metroid games, players would walk around bombing every inch of the map to look for secrets. He wanted to avoid this and felt that it wasn't fun. Would you agree with that?
Agreed.
Yeah.
Totally agreed, yeah.
So they introduced the torch into the game, which allowed players to see what aspects of the maps could and couldn't be interacted with. And then obviously you could see what could be interacted with, and also whether you had the items to interact with that at that particular point in the game.
that is a mechanic that we haven't mentioned yet, but that is very, very useful. And Nintendo have copied that since then with scanning and things. You can do a lot of scanning in the more recent 2D Metroidvanias where it will just reveal blocks that can be broken and what you need to break it. So
top five torches in video games, does it make the list? I mean, the obvious one, Luigi's Mansion is the top torch in video games, has to be.
Yeah, Alan Wake's got a pretty... he has got a very strong torch, but he has got a very battery-hungry torch as well.
They make the torch part of the combat in Alan Wake. That is a strong...
They do.
Then there's the Doom...
Just to get an Energizer fucking partnership.
Yeah, yeah. Then there's the Doom torch that they had to rework. Mm. That maybe doesn't make the list because it was so brutally hard.
It's got. It probably is in the top five torches.
Could make it. I mean, it doesn't really do anything. But the Halo torch and Halo Combat Evolved when you're going through the dark areas is quite good.
Yeah, Leon's torch in Resi 2 Remake's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Any more torches? Again, tweet us anybody who has a torch.
Your best torch. There must be multiple torches in Resident Evil. Is that a?
Yeah.
Oh, there's the torch in Silent Hill 2 as well.
Oh yeah. You know the game Chibi Robo?
Yeah.
Know that game?
Yeah.
I bet he turns into a torch.
Yeah. Anyway. Where did I get to? Yeah, he wanted to avoid this. He felt that it wasn't fun. And he wanted to make sure that, like I said, players were focusing on the correct aspects of the map. Because the map layout was nailed down and largely finalized earlier on, much of the game's 18-month development cycle was spent on tightening the controls, which is funny because you've mentioned the controls specifically, as they felt this would make or break the experience. I mean, that's true. Controls in these games are important, and they will make or break the experience.
100%.
The developers also wanted to make a nod towards Gears of War, so there's a couple areas of the game that they... It's one of these things that I never did, but in hindsight, I probably should have, where they wanted to have like a cover high wall that you were supposed to hide behind and pop out and shoot I never did that. I just stood out in the open lobbing grenades nonstop. But yeah, maybe I should have done that.
I stood behind the walls and didn't realize I was behind him and just kept shooting the walls. I thought he would somehow shoot over the top of him, like, you know, organically if I started to pull the trigger, but no, he just shoots the sandbags or whatever. But that's their nod to their employers there, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
There you go, there's your gears bit. We've got some turrets and some chest-high walls.
It could also be something that they just put into the game and thought, right, well, how do we mention Gears of War in this interview? Because we've got to say that we're linked to this somehow, because that'll help us sell units. Because the game was like a small team owned by Epic, which was at that time owned by Microsoft, or they were a subsidiary, or they were like Bungie, were they just an independent in-house developer?
Yeah, like a second party or something, I guess.
But essentially, because of that relationship, they had access to Microsoft in-house playtesting team who playtested the game. It was during this playtesting period, apparently, that it was decided to add the blue line mark to the game to help guide the player.
Okay.
I've got here, so this was one thing that, and this is a note that I made to highlight, so I don't know if I've mentioned this already, but this was the thing that interested me probably the most about this game. I was going to ask you, Alex, what your thoughts are. We've done this. This is where I mentioned the baby's first Metroid come from. It's guided in a way that other games that we've played for this podcast are not, certainly not the Metroid games. They're not guided in any way, I felt. Mustard felt that adding this blue line was both a benefit and a drawback to the game. So the introduction of the blue line, on one hand, would offer help to players who become stuck, but on the other hand, he worried that players would become over-reliant and be less likely to explore the map. To counter this, they add the blue line and would try and encourage the player to deviate from it at certain points of the game, which I think you touched on, Alex, as well already.
Yeah.
In the game, to work around the obstacle or go hunting for a specific power-up that they would have access to. So yeah, I think that probably does lend credence to what you were saying before, and that they were laying these little breadcrumbs out to try and entice you away from using and relying on the blue mark. Which, again, I think we've discussed this, but I did do that. I would sort of go down a rabbit hole for a minute. So I would go near like an area I could go to, and I would go off and look for that power up. And then I would have a look at the map, and if there was a few around, I would go off looking for it and then return to the blue line, which I think, yeah, again, quality of life, and actually probably did work, which again, I think it's jumping out to me, actually wasn't when I was doing these notes, but is now that we're discussing them, is just how solid the game was designed from top to bottom.
Yeah.
It's just like everything that they've done is clearly thought about, which again, in hindsight, is something that you need to do when you're doing a Metroidvania. But again, if you're noticing it, it's probably been done badly.
Yeah. But yes, you and I will always go on about it on these shows where if there's a very obvious story path, you and I are going to go the opposite way and try and
always
figure out what the side
is. There might
bit
be a collectible around that corner. You
exactly
go the opposite way all the time.
So that's what I think, you know, you're touching on there by saying if you saw a couple of question marks, a little ways from the path you're supposed to follow, you're going to head over there and check it out. And that's the best thing about it, because I don't want to have to backtrack miles away from my objective. And in other games, I'm going to lose where that objective is because there's no marker to show where I have to go back to. So yes, you could do that, and you're not going to have like no way to figure out where you're supposed to be going when you want to go back to the actual main path. But as you're following the blue line and then you're just sort of dotting away, but always in the vicinity of where you're actually supposed to be, that's an excellent way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Apparently during development, Mustard was keen to keep the minimalistic story approach to the game. That shock, I know.
He did that.
He felt that this is what Metroid did and that this was the ideal way to do it. He criticises Metroid Fusion as an example of a story that is too prevalent within one of these games. And then I said, Alex, have you played this game and do you agree? Because I haven't, and I know nothing about Metroid Fusion.
I think, yeah, I haven't finished Metroid Fusion, maybe because of that. I do think that does kind of interrupt the gameplay a little bit too much to do like voiceover and text reading stuff that nobody really wants. Mm-hmm. And he absolutely, like, clearly forced that upon this game, where every cutscene is like 5 to 10 seconds.
If that, yeah.
Usually some guy will say, like, what are you doing in here? Take the suit off. And he'll go, no, and then shoot him.
I did find it funny. I felt like I was getting asked by various soldiers that I was about to kill to take off the suit so many times.
Yeah. I think the only difference, or the key difference, is that Metroid, where it eschews, like, traditional narrative delivery methods, it absolutely soaks itself in atmosphere.
It does, yeah.
Whereas this game does not.
No.
If anything, this game is too covered with cheese.
Yes.
And really basic, like, expositional bullshit, where he just, every gun he picks up as well, he would know exactly what the gun was. He'd be like, oh yeah, fucking AR-301, sweet. And that's it. That's all he would say every time. So yeah, and you'd go past, as we said earlier, you'd go past people like talking in rooms, and they would be saying the most basic, like, expositional bollocks. Like, as if they wouldn't know that they're going to attack New York tomorrow or whatever, or San Francisco. It's like, yeah, that kind of stuff. Is just, there's no subtlety to it. It's just, like, really slap you in the face, obvious. And yeah, that was not the way to go. I'd rather have had no story, because it was just terrible. Insulting.
Almost. Yeah, you're spot on. Alex, do you want to have a stab at guessing the Metacritic score of this game?
Well, it won awards, it so I assume it's high. Yep. Are we talking the original? Have you seen, is there a difference between this and the remastered? I assume the remastered has lower.
I would assume the remastered is lower. I don't know what that is.
I'm going to guess at an 88.
You've nailed it. 88 it has.
No way.
Absolute boss, yeah.
Wow.
As you can tell from the Metacritic score, the game received largely positive reviews. It received multiple Game of the Year awards and E3 Editor's Choice awards. The IGN gave the game 9.4 out of 10. Giant Bomb gave it 5 stars, and GamePro gave it 4.5 out of 5. The team considered, as I think we touched on this before, the team considered a sequel and began early work on this, as well as a tower defense mobile game, but ultimately they decided to begin work on Infinity Blade to be released, as we said, alongside the iPhone 4, which became a massive hit for the developer and has probably funded them ever since, let's be honest. A bit of a bolt from the blue, this game, right? Like, it doesn't. There's nothing before or after it from this developer or publisher, really, to suggest that this was going to be anything other than a complete failure, but somehow it's come out being a pretty good game.
Yeah, although I think if you look at the Metacritic score for like the remaster, it has a 74.
Okay, do you know why?
So it does seem as if potentially like the way we've discussed it so far today, that at the time it was quite a refreshing sort of revival of a genre that was a bit dormant at that point, certainly from the sci-fi side of it. Whereas after looking back at it and how that genre has come on in the, you know, the whatever it is, 14 years since then, it's not quite as pristine as it was. But I think some people are saying like that it's a bit rough around the edges and it's a bit of a letdown in terms of the quality of the port.
Right. Okay. That's a hard thing to look back on with retrospect, isn't it? Because the other thing that jumps out at me, because it's right, and I was going to say, does this sort of Metroidvania renaissance that we've had happen without this game? It probably does, to be honest, because it sort of appears in the middle of a dry spell, and then it continues to be dry for a while, and then this revival happens. So this is just this sort of its own standalone thing during a bit of a drought for the genre, so it probably does happen without this game. But then the other thing that jumped at me when you were talking about that, it being a bit rough around the edges and stuff, and like the one that thing that jumps to mind with me is remember the combat in Batman Arkham Asylum? Everybody was raving about that at the time, thinking how fresh it is and stuff like that. I heard people complaining about that same combat mechanic after the Sony showcase this week just gone past, because that's largely how the Spider-Man combat still takes place like 20 years later odd. And
yeah
things just get old and games move on. You've got to look at these games through the lens in which they came. Does that make sense? Like you can't judge them on a 2023 standard when it's come out in 2009. Like the industry has clearly moved forward since then. And I guess I'm trying to I mean, that's both true and isn't it? I'm talking myself through both ways. We're talking about an entertainment medium and we're talking about games being worth your time. So if you're going to play the game in 2023, it being creaky at the edges does count, doesn't it? But if you're talking about it from an artistic where it came from standpoint, I think it has to be also looked at through its... I don't know, maybe both. You know what I'm trying to say? I'm sort of talking myself in circles.
Yeah, I think if you're going to pick it up, then you want the remastered version, because that will have the updated graphics and it will run smoother. I did see some people just complaining that it was running quite badly on Xbox One, but it probably runs fine. It probably runs better now that it's on Series X. I don't know if they've done anything to it or not, but I imagine it's
brute forced.
Better performance on there. Yeah. I think the biggest problem they had with it was it just didn't really add anything to the remaster. It was just quite a bare bones. Here's some graphics updates. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And the DLC's in it. So yeah, I think perhaps the shine had worn off because the genre had moved on by that point when it came out as a remaster. It probably jumped back in 2014 to be in amongst what it potentially started.
Yeah, and it just
sort of mini revival of it, and it'd been outdone by then by quite a few games.
Which happens, though. That's the nature of video games, right?
Yeah,
like shooters. It's maybe not even a good example because I think that's an industry that's been quite stagnant for a while. But like classic shooters like Medal of Honor that we've covered in this podcast, I don't think Call of Duty exists without Medal of Honor, and Medal of Honor was amazing in its time, but to play today is at times an awful experience, especially with the spawning enemies and stuff. Yeah, I think it just depends what you're coming to the game for. If you're looking for a great old time, you have to be aware that it's an old game and it's got some shortfalls, but at the same time, I don't think there's anything wrong with appreciating where it's come from. Yeah, I'm going to have to think on that.
Like a remaster several years later, I think the PS4 version got an 80. You know, that's not that massive of a drop off.
No, and an 8 out of 10. I mean, like, feels okay for this. Like, it's 7, 8, I think. Like, it's a good game. It's not going to blow your socks off, but you're going to have a good time with it, probably, if you're into this type of game.
Yeah, it's not going to blow your socks off anymore.
No.
It probably did, and I remember it really, really loving it when it came out in 2009, because as we said, it's a product of a barren landscape in that genre, and it made waves because it had no competition. But now it's been some, I mean, people listening to this, looking at the title of the show being Metroidvania, are going to be like, why the fuck didn't you play Hollow Knight or something?
But, yeah. Do you know the big one we're going to get soon is that Skyrim and Oblivion et al. Felt quite groundbreaking at the time. And the Breath of the Wild, I remember watching an interview and they explicitly said that they drew a lot of inspiration from games like that. And they sort of clearly have moved that aspect of the genre forward, and now we're about to get a Star Citizen. I'd be interested to see, does that move the genre on again, or does it continue to do what Skyrim's always done on a bigger scale? I guess that's going to be
Starfield.
Starfield, yeah. Yeah, so yeah. Like Skyrim to Breath of the Wild to Starfield. Does Starfield do what Skyrim's always done, or does it look at where the genre's gone or where these gameplay mechanics have gone via places like Breath of the Wild and even Minecraft, and try and move it on a little bit further? I guess that's going to be the modern Shadow Complex that we've got on the horizon.
Yeah, that is going to be the real test of whether they've still got that Bethesda innovation in their back pocket that they had with the sort of breakthrough of Western RPGs in a
first-person
perspective.
It's going to be a real fascinating year, because actually now looking at the Bethesda catalogue, they have a real spotty history. They've got some real highs and some real, real lows as well. So, yeah, it's jury's out. And I can't wait to see what this game's like. Just to see it.
We just know so little.
Yeah.
It's such a closely guarded thing that it could be worrying in that sense. But, yeah.
Yeah, oh, I can't wait, because then there's even, is it Outer Wilds, or I always get this, Outer Worlds, that the Fallout New Vegas team went and did. That is how you do a mod, to me, anyway. I'm sure people have got, I mean, it does things slightly differently, but to me, that's how you do a modern Fallout-like, or a Skyrim-like, or a game of that type.
Yeah, and they've got a sequel for that coming out as well.
Mm-hmm.
To build on that format. And a friend of mine the other day said that apparently there's strong rumors all over the internet that there's going to be a Fallout New Vegas 2 is going to be the next.
I've been hearing that a little bit too. Yeah. Need to get my finger out and play Fallout New Vegas properly.
No, there's probably never been a better time, considering it's at its best now on
it is.
Series X.
Mm-hmm. Maybe one day. Alex, have you had any other thoughts, opinions, or feelings? Or is it time to draw this to a conclusion?
I think we can conclude it there. It's obviously the lesser of the two games that we've played, but it's still got some charm, and it's still a very well made. It's not an early Metroidvania, but it's an early like modern one. If that makes sense,
yeah, I think that does make sense
as the catalyst for what we now think of as a Metroidvania, a modern Metroidvania game like Bloodstained. Shadow Complex is still a very good one, albeit one that was made to be snappy and almost like a risk that they wanted to take because they loved Metroid.
I'm really
fine with that.
Yeah, it feels like a labor of love, and a labor of love that they've largely delivered on.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Sure is.
It is. And on that nice, warm, fuzzy, fluffy note, brings us to the end of another episode of the Winner Is You podcast. If you like what you heard, and even if you didn't, why not give our numbers a bump by subscribing to our podcast on your podcast feed of choice? Or if you prefer to imbibe your podcast in a visual format, you can head over to YouTube and search for Winner Is You podcast, where you can subscribe to our YouTube channel. If our podcast isn't enough of your we're basically bi-weekly at this point, in dose of a Winner Is You chattery, you can also follow us on Twitter at Winner Is You Pod, and you can even send us an email to tell us how wrong we are about our gaming opinions, or preferably about your favourite torches in video games, by writing to winnersyoupod@gmail.com. Alex and I also have Twitter at davidsmiley1 and at superthrillix, where you'll find some gaming chat interspersed with sport, wrestling, and maybe the odd dog picture. Before I ask you if you've got any housekeeping, Alex, have you recovered from the news that Poch is now the Chelsea manager?
No, I don't think I ever will. unless he fails spectacularly. But then I don't really want to revel in his failings. But now I have to. Yeah. It's in my DNA.
That's so upsetting because he's the best manager you've had maybe in as long as I've known you, I think.
Yeah, oh yeah, easily. And if he wins something with them, then that'll be what he's remembered for in this country, won't it?
Yeah, which is...
He goes and wins the league with Chelsea.
Such a kick in the...
Not going to be remembered as the Spurs boss anymore. Yeah.
Have you any housekeeping, Alex?
I do not. My house is clean.
It's clean, tidy. Time to turn off the lights. And on that bombshell, I've been David. He has been Alex. And we have been Owen Hershey. And I'm out.
Keep gaming.